the wind in the mountains is just, it can change so quickly, and different terrain features can really create different wind patterns.
Welcome to the Hunt Backcountry podcast, presented by Exo Mountain Gear. This podcast and the gear that we produce at Exo Mountain Gear share the same purpose: to make you a more capable, confident, and successful backcountry hunter. This show is all about providing you with valuable information from experienced hunters. To learn more about the podcast or about our backcountry hunting packs, visit exomountaingear.com. Well, welcome to episode 143. Thanks for tuning in. The topic on this episode is weather and the role that it plays in the mountains and understanding weather patterns and the different conditions that affect us as hunters as we head into the backcountry. Our guest is Eric Knopf, and he is a fly fishing guide during the summer and then an avalanche forecaster in the winter. So he has this interesting mix of experience in terms of spending a ton of time outdoors and then also a scientific and educational understanding of weather patterns. So he's seen it all. It's really interesting to talk with Eric about the weather in the mountains, how unpredictable it can be, yet at the same time, some of the things that we can look for to anticipate, to predict, to prepare for conditions that we might face as we head out into the mountains. So hope you guys enjoy this one. Before we dive into it, wanted to give a shout out to Patrick Wagenecht for the review. Patrick, we want to send you some Exo Mountain Gear swag, so please send us your shipping information. You can contact us directly via email to podcasts@exomountaingear.com. Listeners, you can do the same. Leave us a review in iTunes or Stitcher, wherever else you're listening to this, or reach out to us directly via email to podcasts@exomountaingear.com. Okay, let's dive into the show with Eric and understand weather and how that can affect us for our hunts. Well, Eric, welcome to the Hunt Backcountry podcast. Thank you for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Yeah, excited to dive into these topics today and learn from your experience and see how we can apply it to our adventures. Can you go ahead and start with kind of introduction background so we have context, both a bit personal, professional, whatever you'd like to share there?
Sure. My name is Eric Knopf. I live in Bozeman, Montana. I am an avalanche forecaster for the Gallatin National Forest Avalanche Center in the winter. And I'm currently a fly fishing guide and outfitter in Bozeman during the summer months. And I've also been a climbing guide for Exo Mountain Guides and Rainier Mountaineering in the past. So I've guided in multiple realms. And I grew up in Minnesota, hunting and fishing and skiing, and made my way west. And I've been out here for almost 25 years now, so that's kind of a little history on myself.
Yeah, perfect. How's the fishing season been this year?
Fishing has been, it's getting a lot better right now. We had one of the biggest snow years really in history this past winter, so our winters were, or our rivers were running really high for pretty much all of April, May, and most of June, but things are coming around now, which is good. And so the river systems are really helpful or really healthy after a nice big high water spring like we had.
Yeah. So you just mentioned the incredible amount of snow that you guys had this past season that had to make your winter job there as an avalanche forecaster quite interesting. Any particular stories or, you know, main avalanches from this past year?
Yeah, it was one thing that comes to mind is how early the winter started. Last year, we had 3 to 4 feet of snow in September. And we actually had our first avalanche fatality on October 7th last year. And that was the earliest avalanche fatality we've ever had. And so it's just, and then the winter just kept rolling from there. So it was kind of a stark way to start the season. And, but it was a really just kind of this strong reminder that weather can surprise you and do things that are unexpected. And you really have to be prepared for whatever it throws at you.
You said 3 to 4 feet. What elevation are you talking about?
Oh, you know, above 9,000 feet.
Okay.
Eight to 9,000 feet. And then so every, you know, we had just a ton of rain at lower elevations and, you know, kind of mix of snow and rain at that mid elevation, 6 to 8,000 feet. But once you got more in the Alpine, we had people called it the best September skiing they've ever had.
Wow. That's crazy. I can't imagine. Yeah. Probably October rifle season was a cluster up there. They got that much snow.
It was a cluster indeed. Yeah. Bow hunting season and rifle season were very snowy.
Wow.
Yeah. But in contrast, the closing day of hunting season around Thanksgiving, it was 70 degrees in Big Timber, Montana on closing day of rifle. And I was hunting in a t-shirt. So, you know, it was a bit of a strange hunting season weather-wise. For sure. Very cold and snowy to start. Actually much warmer. Anything can happen.
Yeah. Well, it sounds like that story of last fall is the perfect reason, you know, to illustrate why we need to cover this topic in this podcast. You know, as we look at big game seasons in the fall and September, October, and somewhat into November, and talk about hunting the Mountain West, we just never know what we're going to get into. How does weather influence the way we should plan our trips? Let's begin to understand some of the things we need to prepare for, look for, but let's just start with planning. How do you look at weather, not as a forecaster, but as someone who, you know, loves to get into the outdoors? How do you look at weather and how does that change your plans for your trip?
Yeah, for me, weather is really the most influential factor when it comes to trip planning and decision making. You know, weather isn't something that we can control, but it's certainly something we can prepare for. And so really having a good baseline knowledge of what the weather is going to do over the next 24 hours or 2 days or even the next week is just crucial when it comes to making a safe and productive game plan for going into the backcountry.
Let's begin to unravel some of the specifics that we need to pay attention to and understand so that we can really look at the next, as you mentioned, 24 hours ahead, the next week ahead, and understand what we might be experiencing on a backcountry hunt. So what things should we be looking at other than just pulling up, you know, a random weather website and looking at a forecast?
Yeah, it's a great question. You know, one thing that I really want to pay attention to is what's the temperature doing? You know, are we set for a really cold period where we need to be bringing our extra clothes, our extra layers, our hand warmers, you know, anything we can to stay warm and comfortable in the backcountry? And also with temperature, we need to really focus on precipitation. Are we going to have rain, snow, things that, you know, once you get wet in the backcountry, you can, you know, be miserable in a hurry, and it can also be really dangerous. So we're looking at temperature, precipitation, obviously wind is a big factor in the hunt. and you're just kind of trying to take in all of these different components and make a safe plan for what you should bring. And also, you know, are you driving into the mountains? Are you going to be hunting, you know, high up in the mountains where maybe it's calm and sunny and nice when you start your hunt, and then you drive 10 miles into the mountains and it snows 2 feet? You know, I know multiple people whose cars have been stranded in the mountains for days or even weeks because they get hit with an unexpected snowstorm. So it's really important to pay attention to those factors. Temperature, precipitation, and wind are two things, or a few things, that you really need to look out for. And so looking at those, then you can prepare what kind of clothes you need to bring. Where you're going to go is really important. Are you going to go high in the mountains? Are you going to stick to lower elevation terrain? And just trying to make a good comprehensive plan and not just shoot from the hip. So weather just really plays an important role in how you make those decisions.
Yeah. It's interesting you mentioned that, you know, tidbit about cars being stranded. One of the reasons a hunt that I was on last year was cut short, we had to bail out simply because we knew if we stayed and this storm hit, that where we were and where we had to go, just in terms of the roads, which were not in great condition to begin with, but the elevation that they crossed and the pass that we had to get through, if we might have been fine hunkering it out on the mountain, but once we got back to the truck, if this storm was what they said it was going to be, we knew that we were likely going to be stranded without a way out for at least a couple of days. And that leads into all kinds of things that, you know, are worth considering, such as always having extra gear, extra food, extra everything back at the truck. So, you know, we always think about what we put in our packs and what we're carrying into the backcountry. But how much thought do we give about what's back at the truck? If we're doing a hunt where we have packed in, if we pack out to the truck, but then we need to live out of that truck for two or three more days, do we have what we need to do that?
Yeah, absolutely. When you're heading into the backcountry, it's not just being prepared for a 4 to 6 hour period. Yeah, a lot of it is, just like you said, what you kind of have to play the what if game. What if we do get stuck? What if we do have to spend the night or a few nights even away from the truck? Do we have a lighter? Can we build a fire? Do we have an emergency? Do we have a first aid kit for some unexpected event? Do you have communication? Can you reach out and let your family know that, hey, we're not going to make it back tonight or tomorrow? And so, yeah, having just that extra level of preparation can really be helpful. And I work on search and rescue, and hunting season is by far the busiest time of year for search and rescue, or it can be. It's really common for hunters to just get lost. So having a compass or a GPS or knowing where you are is really important. And just, you know, something happens or you actually get an animal and you have to take a bunch of extra time to process that animal. So it can set you back farther than you think. And so having a way to communicate with your friends and family and being prepared for that extra night out, or if you have to be at the car, it's something that's really easy to overlook when you're caught up just in the excitement of throwing all your stuff in the truck and like, yeah, we're going hunting, we'll be back, you know, this evening or tomorrow morning, and next thing you know, that's a 3 or 4 day trip. So yeah, you always need to be planning ahead a little bit.
Yeah. In your experience with search and rescue, are most events triggered by lapses in judgment or some other sort of lapse that was in the pre-planning, meaning like not sufficient gear, not sufficient equipment, something like that?
I would say a majority of the events aren't serious. They're just a group that got lost or got stuck or, you know, had or just had for some reason had to take a lot more time getting home. And so if they don't leave a message, so having a spot messenger or an inReach or something where you can text and let people know you're okay is really important. I think a lot of our calls just come from friends and family who are like, you know, this group was supposed to be back for dinner and they're not here. And then all of a sudden it's 8 or 9 at night and they're still not back. And people, you know, the families get, they get nervous and they call search and rescue or they call 911. And when, once you take that step, a lot of different balls go in motion and it can set off a fairly large chain reaction. So it's, it takes a lot of manpower and a lot of resources. So really having that game plan and how to communicate with your friends and family if you're running late can kind of save a lot of trouble in the big picture.
Great. Well, diving back into weather, I just want to understand a bit more on looking ahead and understanding forecasted weather. And as you mentioned, you know, looking at the temperature, looking at precipitation, which I think we all understand, but there's always talk of pressure changes, barometric pressure, high pressure, low pressure systems. Help us understand what those are, what that means, and then what role do they play in the mountains, and how might they affect weather for a trip that we're heading into?
So if I'm looking at the forecast, obviously I want to know what the weather patterns and what the weather systems are doing. And so if I look at one of my graphs, I'm going to be looking, you know, are we in a high pressure system right now? And high pressure means sinking air. Stable conditions typically means sunny, calm, nice weather. So and it's usually a ridge of high pressure. So you get this kind of dominating ridge in the jet stream. And if you're on the southern part of that ridge, you know, if you're in the middle of a high pressure system, that typically means nice weather. And it also means in the mountains, especially in the fall and winter, you get strong temperature inversions. So under a high pressure system, the air is sinking. It's trapping cold air in the valleys. Warm air is actually at higher elevations. So if you're camping or staying down in a valley and you wake up, it could be, you know, 20 degrees and you're like, God, it is freezing cold out. Then you hike 1,000 or 2,000 feet up and it's 40 degrees. And so that's a very common occurrence during a high pressure system is our strong temperature inversions. But high pressure systems mean stable air, generally calm, clear conditions, nice weather. Low pressure systems, it's kind of counterintuitive. Low pressure systems actually refer to rising air or unstable air. And that's where you get that's where storm systems typically occur. Rising air, warm air rises, it condenses, forms clouds, often rain and so, or snow. So low pressure systems, unstable air, typically bad weather. So knowing what kind of pattern you're in, do you have a low pressure system coming over or a high pressure system can really help you determine what type of weather you're going to have for the next day or a couple of days.
So in terms of high and low, the relationship of like pressure and volatility are opposite. So low pressure is higher volatility, higher pressure is lower volatility.
Exactly. It's kind of confusing.
Yeah.
So high pressure systems in the northern hemisphere spin clockwise, and low pressure systems in the northern hemisphere spin counterclockwise, and it's the opposite in the southern hemisphere. It's pretty wild how that occurs.
So beyond pressure, how can different weather patterns affect specific areas differently. And just to relate something that might be practical, you know, on hunts in the past, we've had these really small weather radios. And obviously, those are somewhat general in terms of they'll mention a forecast for a specific area. And maybe that's 20 miles away and a difference of 4,000 feet, for example. So if you're relying on something like that, how can you help relate what you might experience where you're at that's, again, maybe 20 miles away and vastly different in elevation? How can you help connect those two to make a good guess on what you might experience?
Yeah, weather systems, the mountains are just, you know, they create their own weather, and they're amazingly diverse over just a short distance. So knowing what types of weather patterns affect different areas is really important. You know, and my job as an avalanche forecaster, a lot of times I'm looking at what direction the storm is coming from. And so if we have a strong storm system approaching from the northwest, a northwest flow typically means colder air, often good amounts of precipitation. And around Bozeman, a northwest flow will heavily favor the Bridger Mountains and the Big Sky area, areas closer to Bozeman. But the farther south we go, towards West Yellowstone or Yellowstone Park, a northwest flow can affect those areas completely different. Just a quick example, the Bridger Range, where Bridger Bowl is located, our local ski resort outside of Bozeman, if we get this strong northwest flow, it's not uncommon for Bridger Bowl to get 2 to 3 feet of snow, say, overnight, just this kind of wild microclimate. And Bozeman might pick up 2 to 4 inches of snow. Other mountain ranges might, you know, just pick up a few inches, whereas just that one local area, Bridger Bowl, will get 2 to 3 feet. And that typically occurs on a northwest flow. If we're looking at a southwest flow, the Bridger Range really is not favored at all. So if we have a strong southwest flow coming in, we're expecting the mountains around West Yellowstone, you know, Yellowstone Park, areas in our southern forecast area to be heavily favored by that. And then a zonal flow is where storm systems come in basically from the due west. And that type of flow favors areas west of the Continental Divide. And so it's these different directions from which storms come can really play an important role in the character of the storm. So just kind of being familiar with your local area is really, really helpful to know. You know, well, if it's a northwest flow or southwest flow, well, typically isn't going to hit this area very hard, or it will. So local knowledge is pretty important when it comes to that type of detailed storm direction.
Okay. And then if you're hunting a new area, hunting out of state, you don't have that local knowledge, you just fall back on more relying on the forecast then of trying to pinpoint at least as close as you can to the area that you'll be in?
Yeah. Yep, I think that's always a challenge when you're going to a new area and you're not quite sure how the weather affects that certain zone. So yeah, if I'm going to a new area to hunt, I typically just look at the weather forecast and look at it pretty closely. You know, I look at multiple different things. I'm looking at the jet stream, the 500 millibar, the 700 millibar, which are wind patterns at different elevations, and then obviously precipitation percentages, and you know the points. The NOAA, the National Weather Service point forecast, does a pretty good job in nailing down what the weather's going to do. NOAA point forecast is pretty accurate when you get within a 12 to 24 hour window. But once you get outside of that, once you go beyond 24 hours, it gets more and more difficult to predict accurate weather.
You know what? One question I had along the same lines is there any good way to predict, say it does say 70% chance of rain, is there a way to tell if, does that mean for 30 minutes or for 10 hours?
That if the weatherman could answer that question, they would be our heroes. But right. As we know, you know, being a weather forecaster, it's an extremely challenging job. And I think it's, you know, it's 70% with precipitation, and in reality, it's 0 or 100, you know, mm-hmm. It's like, is it going to rain or isn't it? And, so yeah, 70% chance. Well, that's a pretty good chance that it's going to rain. So if I'm looking at a point forecast for an area I'm going to go hunting and it says 70% chance of rain today, I mean, that's for sure. I'm bringing extra clothes, my raincoat. I'm going to be prepared to be wet. Even when I'm hunting in the mountains, even if it says 20% chance of rain, I typically treat a 20% chance of precipitation the same as I'm treating a 70% chance of precipitation. I typically don't go into the mountains without proper rain gear and clothing.
Okay.
So it's really difficult to know what they mean when they say 70,
right?
You know, yeah. Or 50% chance of rain today. Okay. Flip a coin.
Yeah. You mentioned that a specific NOAA forecast, which is something I've used, but if listeners aren't familiar with that forecasting tool or maybe how to access it, can you kind of quickly give them some context or guidance on how to access NOAA forecast for different pinpoint areas?
Yeah, so right now I'm on forecast.weather.gov. It's just the National Weather Service website, and it typically brings up like a Google map display. And if you just click on an area, so I'll just click on Bozeman here, and it's going to bring up my 7-day Bozeman point forecast. And, you know, tonight it's a 40 to 70% chance of thunderstorms in Bozeman. So it's a helpful tool because it gives you a point forecast on any location that you click. And it's a really easy site to find. If you just even type in NOAA point forecast, it should bring up a map of the area that you're in, or at least a general map, and then you can kind of start clicking different locations to get your more specific point forecast.
Yeah. And then going back to the forecast, you mentioned you looked at two different wind forecasts for different elevations. What were the terms you used there?
So when I'm looking at wind, if I'm in my winter job as a avalanche forecaster, I'm looking at the 500 millibar, which is roughly 18,000 feet. So that's kind of our upper elevation wind. And the 300 millibar, and that's the 300 millibar and 500 millibar, that's typically the jet stream. So what direction are the storms coming from, and where are the storms being ushered in from? And then I want to narrow it down a little bit. The 700 millibar is roughly 10,000 feet. So that's kind of ridge top or you know, our mountains around Bozeman, roughly around 10,000 feet. So that's kind of given me an idea of what the winds are doing, you know, near the tops of the mountains. And then that's going to help me just determine, am I dealing with strong winds? You know, are winds going to be calm? And so looking at the jet stream, knowing what direction the storms are coming from, and then kind of narrowing it down to those more mountaintop ridge winds is pretty helpful. And so 500 millibar, roughly 18,000 feet, 700 millibar is about 10,000 feet. And those are the two I look at a lot.
Where do you find that info?
This one website, It's NCAR. It's weather.rap.ucar.edu. So I think if you just type in NCAR, National Center for Atmospheric Research, they have a great website where you can look at temperature, dew point, precipitation, winds. It gives you kind of all that information in one easy-to-use site.
So the wind forecast at 10,000 feet, does that give us any indication for what the wind might be doing during hunt? It's if we're hunting at 10,000 or for that matter, 8,500, is there any relevance to forecasted wind versus what we might experience in terms of hunters and understanding the wind and for a hunting situation?
Yeah, I think it's relevant. I think the wind in the mountains is just, it can change so quickly, and different terrain features can really create different wind patterns. I think it'll give you a good baseline, like, okay, we're going to have strong southwest winds today, 15 to 20 miles an hour. So I think, one, that just sets the stage, okay, it's going to be windy today. The winds are coming out of this, you know, the upper elevation winds, 10,000 foot winds are out of the southwest. And so we're kind of envisioning that's going to create somewhat windy or gusty conditions, even at lower elevations. Are the winds always going to be blowing out of the southwest? Does that mean I can sit in this certain location and be upwind the whole time? Not especially. There's been some really cool studies done at ski resorts who are trying to determine avalanche formation, but I think it's relevant in the realm of hunting, where they have people standing with little anemometers, so wind readers, in different locations in the ski resort, and you have a southwest wind pattern. But if you're standing at this one spot, the wind is always coming from the northwest. It doesn't matter what wind direction, you know, the predominant winds are blowing. The terrain is creating this wind pattern. We're in this one specific spot. It is always coming out of the northwest. And so terrain really can influence wind patterns. So knowing that you have, you know, a strong southwest wind at upper elevations really isn't gonna, it's not the way it's gonna be everywhere on the mountainside. So you have to, you know, you obviously have to have your chalk or whatever you're gonna use to try and figure out which way the wind is coming. So I think it's really helpful to just look at the wind forecast and see if it's gonna be calm or windy, and then try to manage that wind once you're in your specific area.
Yeah. Are there any like helpful rules of thumb on understanding how terrain will affect wind, or if certain types of terrain features might lead to consistent winds in a certain way? Like you mentioned that spot, it's always, you know, north, northwest. That's not anything we can interpret by looking at terrain. That's just literally getting in there and understanding it over time and experience.
Yeah, that's pretty much it. I think it's really difficult, yeah, to just venture, you know, into the hills and be like, well, I'm standing here and judging by the elevation of this hill over here and the forest over there that the winds will be coming this way. Like I don't, you know, I think that's probably pretty hard to predict, especially if you're new to the area. So I think you really, and plus wind is always changing, which direction it comes from. So I think it just comes down to, putting in your time and trying to figure it out. I don't think there's any general rule of thumb.
Speaking of winds changing, something that most of us are familiar with it to some extent is thermals, and the concept of them rising and falling with times of day. Can you help us understand those a bit more from a scientific perspective of kind of what is actually happening? How reliable are those patterns, and maybe some things that might change or affect those patterns of thermals?
Yeah, thermals, you know, I'm not an expert by any means on thermals, but typically they're just a column of rising air. And thermals, I think, typically occur later in the day. So in the morning, you have cold, typically calm conditions. And then as the sun heats up the earth and the earth warms, the air starts to rise. And you create stronger thermals in the afternoon. So they're just columns of rising air once the earth warms up. And then those, you know, thermals can rise thousands of feet up. And that can sometimes, if you have really strong thermals, also known as convection, where rising air condenses, cools, and then ultimately forms clouds, sometimes rain. So thermals generally occur later in the day once the earth warms up.
With your experience, both as understanding weather as a forecaster, your experience personally as an outdoorsman, as fishing, hunting, climbing, and then also with rescue and getting firsthand look at some of the situations that outdoorsmen and women find themselves in, what other topics, whether it's weather-related, safety-related, like what comes to mind that you would want our listeners to know, to be thinking about, to be planning or preparing for, any of the above, that you just would love to share with us?
Basic common sense plays a really important role in having a safe trip into the backcountry. And that typically includes good preparation, just planning ahead, taking the time to get a detailed weather forecast for the specific area you're going. And we know that weather changes really quickly. So it may say 10 or 15% chance of rain over the next 3 days, but really be prepared for if that changes and it only takes 15 minutes of heavy rain or snow to get you wet and soaked, and that can change the entire outcome of the day or the trip. So I think just basic planning, preparation, having your good rain gear, having extra layers, extra food, water, communication with people, letting people know where you're going. And a lot of that, you know, kind of falls on what the weather is going to do. And it's sometimes really easy to overlook simple steps when you're getting excited to go for a hunt or going to the backcountry, but just slowing things down and really taking the time to try to make smart, focused decisions is important for a safe hunt and trip into the backcountry.
Yeah. And then any advice for folks who might find themselves in a situation, maybe a bit unprepared or unexpected, and are in a weather situation that can pose risk? You know, I don't want to say it's an emergency per se, but, you know, they have gotten wet, maybe they have faced some exposure and cold. Does that just fall back on understanding what the body does in those situations? Do you recommend specific types of education on like rewarming? What are some of the things that we should know if we encounter these situations?
Well, I think, that's tough. You know, once you get cold and once you start to shiver and get, you know, mild stages of hypothermia, even just really mild, not life-threatening, but just getting cold and wet can really start to alter your decision-making and your train of thought. So one important step is knowing where you are in relation to your camp or your car. If you're cold and you're lost, then that can be a scary situation. And so I'm not an expert on how the body behaves once it, the different stages of hypothermia. But if you find yourself shivering, kind of starting to shiver uncontrollably, then you're in the first stages of hypothermia. And if you're a long ways from camp or the car, it's really important to be able to start a fire or have some way to get yourself warmed back up. And but just knowing where you are in relation to your car, your camp, and being able to get back there quickly is probably the best method for keeping yourself out of serious trouble.
Yeah. It's interesting that it sounds like we just need to make sure we master the basics. And it's often those basics that we think we know or we think we have covered, but we just kind of assume that we know them or have them covered. And we don't actually practice them. We don't spend a ton of time preparing for them. We're so focused and busy on preparing, our calling or our shooting or what have you as hunters. But it sounds like we need to make sure we don't just assume that fire, water, shelter, these basics, we just can't take them for granted. And that's really what makes the difference in making sure that we stay safe out there.
Yeah, that is the bottom line. That is a great point. And it is. If you can master the basics, you have stacked the deck in your favor. And, having a checklist is really important. I know I have a long checklist before I go out into the backcountry, no matter what I'm doing. Do I have these certain items that I always bring with me? And yeah, just the basic knowledge of staying warm and dry, building a fire, knowing where you're at, a compass, a map, very simple things that can make a big difference in the outcome of your trip. But I fully agree. The basics are critically important.
Yeah. Eric, this is awesome. Thank you for taking the time to share with us. We've already mentioned NOAA and some of the other weather resources. Any others that come to mind before we wrap up to make sure we could point listeners to that you think they could benefit from?
Yeah, so NOAA is a good one. I like to look at the weather discussion. I think the discussion is, if you just Google, weather discussion, it'll bring you the discussion for your area. I think they give a really good scientific, but they also give a fairly accurate description of what the weather is going to do for the next few days. So the discussion is a good one. Again, the NCAR forecast page is helpful. And yeah, just taking time to inform yourself on different weather websites and how weather affects certain areas is really helpful in planning for your hunt.
Perfect. Eric, thanks again for joining us.
Thank you very much. I had a good time. And have a safe and successful hunting season out there.
Well, thank you guys so much for tuning in. If you want to share that feedback, we'd love to see that review or hear from you directly. Send us an email to podcast@exomountaingear.com, and be sure to go to exomountaingear.com/podcast if you want to subscribe or check out all previous episodes that we have released thus far.